Okay, good morning everybody. Thank you for braving the heat to get here. Don't worry, a few more months and it'll be snowing again. So we'll remember the hot weather then with fondness. For some reason the shiur wasn't mentioned in the Torah Tidbits this week, but just to confirm that I will be here to this God for the next two Tuesdays. To finish off the course, we're on Shira 8 today. We'll have 9 next week and 10 the week after, and also on the last week that I'm here on the Tuesday, so the Wednesday, the next day after that, so we'll be starting the Elul series, please God, and then we'll be moving forward from there, and I'll be here on a Wednesday at 10:15. That's the plan currently. If they change it, then I'll let you know. Starting from after Rosh Chodesh Elul, the first Wednesday after Rosh Chodesh Elul, whenever that is, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from tomorrow, then please, or 2 weeks from tomorrow, you know, 2 weeks from tomorrow, you're quite right, Rosh Hashanah is not so far away, then we'll do that. And Wednesday, yeah, double show, okay, double billing, okay, fine. Last time, 2 weeks ago, just before Tisha B'Av, we told the story of Churban in the sense of the halachic process. We told the story of a fight to the death with the Romans, which of course, as we all know, resulted in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of Bar Kochba, and the tragedies that happened after that. We also, perhaps even more upsetting, we saw an infighting within Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. We read about the awful events of that day when they went to the attic of Hananiah ben Chiklia and Beis Shammai were a majority and they were slaughtering each other in the stairwells. We saw all that leading up to the Churban. Today is fittingly a story of Nechama. Post Tisha B'Av, it's how the Jewish people pulled it all. That's right, Nachamu Nachamu Ami, and the Jewish people pulled it together. They pulled it together to such a degree that they managed to divert and focus all the politics into the production of something which actually preserved the halakhic process and developed the Jewish people enormously, which is the production of the Talmud. And what I want to talk about today, and continue with next time, is how we ended up with this incredible book. When we call the people of the book, really that book is the Talmud. That is our book. That is the book that makes us different from every other religion and every other nation. Other people claim the Bible for their own, but nobody else claims to be able to unlock the secrets of the Talmud. So how we ended up with the Mishnah, and next time the Gemara, and after the Gemara, that is the story of Nechama, which I think we need to bring out from today. So there's going to be lots of intrigue, there's going to be lots of politics, lots of historical context today, because what I'm leading to by the end of today's shiur is an understanding of where the Mishnah came from and how it's structured. Okay? I'm sure many of you in this room have learned Mishnayos. If you haven't, then I recommend that you should. They're very interesting and very accessible, and they give a very interesting overview of the halakhic process, but more about that in a few minutes. Let's start with the first source. We saw this last time, that there were a number of shifts of what I call shifts of paradigm, shifts of emphasis as to how the halakhic process worked. We saw last time Ezra, we talked about Ezra in the Second Temple period, but of course Hillel was the next. Look at number one, Shevet Chilek, Shinishtachcha Torah, Israel, when the Torah was in crisis, was at risk of being forgotten. Ala Ezra mi Babel v'yasta, Ezra came from Babel and re-established the Second Temple, and, well, maybe he didn't build the Second Temple, but the process is halakha in the Second Temple. Nechon, exactly. Moshe, that's right, and we talked about that last time, absolutely right. Chazra v'nishtacha alav Hillel, Hababli v'yasta. When it was again in crisis, Hillel came from Babel and re-established Torah. What did Hillel do? Now, this we never looked at last time. What exactly was the chidush of Hillel in Babel? So if you look in number two, we see a source from Sefer Yuchsin, which is going to throw light on that. V'Hillel sider sheish sidarim al-peh. Okay? He began the process of turning the Torah Shebal Peh, which was an unstructured mass of information developed and passed down and evolving over time. We talked about that over the last few shirim. He turned it into 6 orders. Okay? HaKolalim, HaTorah, Umisham, Ulalan,
Kedei shelo tishtane ha-Torah. Tishtana ha-Torah.
So that the Torah would not be changed. It had to be preserved in some way. Now, of course, there's a price that you pay for that, which is the price of crystallizing Torah, and now it loses some of its flexibility and its responsiveness, but it is a price that they have to pay. We'll talk about that soon. V'zemitchilat malchut hurdus. And this, just to put it in context, was the beginning of the malchut of hurdus. Hillel and Herod. Okay, correct. He was an Edomi, he was a Roman appointment, really. He was questionably Jewish or not Jewish. If any of you went to the Herod exhibition at the Israel Museum a couple of years ago, very, very interesting. Herod was a very important figure in our past, and his architecture still all around Eretz Israel today. But Hillel and Shammai lived at the same time. And the Gemara clarifies for us that even at the time of Hillel, there was a lot of content to Torah Shebaal Peh. Have a look at this fascinating source number 3. Tan Rabbanan, Shmoinim Talmidim, Hayu Loyle Hillel Hazakim. So famously he had 80 Talmidim. Gadol Shebekulan Yonatan Ben Uziel. The greatest of them was Yonatan Ben Uziel, and the Midrashim about how he learnt, and the birds got burnt up as the fire was coming out of his head, etc. Katan Shebekulan Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So the lowest of his 80 students was Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So Amru Alava, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what did they say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Shaloi Niach, Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara. And here's a list of what he was involved in. And you see it includes things that we associate with later periods than him. Mishnah, okay, Mikra is Tanakh. Okay, fine, he had Tanakh. Mishnah, Gemara, okay, Halachot, Va'agadot, Digdukei Torah, Digdukei Sofrim, Kalim v'chamurim, Tal v'chalmez, the ideas of the process of learning halacha, Gezerot Shavot, and Gezerot Shav, I'm not getting into them now, Tkufot, which is calendrical calculations, Gematriot, which I'm not getting into now, what exactly Gematriot are and what they're not. People often abuse Gematriot terribly, but that's not for now, okay? Umashalot Kovsim, Umashalot Shualim, different kinds of legends, tales, whatever. Sichat Shadim, he was able to connect with the higher forces, spiritual forces. Sichat Dekalim, Sichat Malchei Ashares, the Davar Gadol, the Davar Katan. He was involved in the great things and the small things. What are the great things? Davar Gadol, Maaseh Merkava, as the works of the chariot, whatever that is, which some associate that with Kabbalistic ideas, the Rambam associates that with philosophy, metaphysics, okay? The Davar Katan, and the small matter, which is Havayas de Avaya de Rava. The questions and analysis of Avaya and Rava. Now, Avaya and Rava lived 300 years after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So what does it mean to say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was involved in the argumentation of Avaya and Rava? The argument of Avaya and Rava is a code for what we today call Gemara. The back and forth of Gemara, the analysis, the questions, the answers, the incisions, etc. This was already, says the Gemara here, in play. This was not new. Maybe the words of Avaya and Rava, the actual formulation of the Talmud specifically, yes, absolutely. They were put in place later on by Rav Ashi, we'll see that next time. But the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara wants to tell us, was not something which was new, it was just unstructured. It wasn't crystallized in the way that it became crystallized, which we're going to talk about today. And Hillel was the first, really, the first generation to start to crystallize and structure that Torah Shebaal Peh. Yes?
I just wanted to ask, so the way this is written, it says that Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel was greater than...
Right.
Rabbi Yochanan ben
Zakkai. 80 times greater. He was the best, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the 80th.
And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was involved.
Correct, in all those things. So if you imagine what Rabbi Yochanan ben Hillel, or Yonatan ben Uziel was involved in. So people go to his kever, if indeed that is his kever, up in Amuka. That's a place to go. It's an interesting place. It's a very beautiful place. Yes, a lady had a question at the back.
Same
question. Fine. And indeed, I'm going to be reading from this next source a few times. Rav Reuven Margolis wrote a very, very interesting sefer called Yisod HaMishnah Va'arichata, of how the Mishnah was developed. And I'm going to be bringing a few snippets from his work. It's a contemporary work. He lived in the 20th century. And he says as follows in number four. As Hitchilat Kufa Miyuchedet V'Tzivyona Va'arichot HaMishnah. Now began, he said, a very special, unusual, new period in the development of the Mishnah. She ad heina lo hayu ki im reshimot pratiyot shel halachot psukot. It hadn't been organized. It was just a few recorded things here and there. We'll see that it existed, but it existed bal peh. We'll see later. Va'ata hitchilu ziknei Beit Shammai la'aroch mishnata. Now, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel we saw last time. And the main difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel was that Beit Shammai would only teach one opinion. Whose opinion? Theirs. Whereas Beit Hillel would teach across the board. So he says Beit Shammai actually began this process. They only taught their own opinion. And therefore Beit Shammai didn't turn out to be accepted. But nitkabla ach mishnayot she'archu zikne Beit Hillel. But Beit Hillel, who were also involved in this process, their mishnah was accepted. Why? Because he taught both sides of the equation. And then he makes an interesting comparison. Beit Shammai kemishna rishona, Beit Hillel kemishna achrona. Sometimes when you're learning the mishnah, it gives a halacha, and it says, but this is what they call mishnah rishona. The earlier version of the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah didn't just appear in one version. It develops over time. And here Rav Margolis is saying that the earlier Mishnah, the Mishnah Rishonah, was more Beit Shammai's editions of the Mishnah. And Ben Hillel was the Mishnah Achronah, which stuck, which actually was adopted by the people. Sheha Mishnah Achronah, Shehi Achar, Chazara, okay, after it had been gone over and over and over, Nishneid B'Yemei Rebbe Yehoshua. Now, Rabbi Yehoshua, we need to get a clear understanding of all of these people. I actually brought you don't need to sense it now, but in the index, at the appendix, at the end of the sheet, I brought you the list of all the generations of Tanaim. Well, you can sense it now. It's too enticing not to sense it, right, if I mention it. I brought you, if you just look for a second on page 7, so that you will have a clear, if you like, 7, the right of the very back page. The very back page. No, not source number 7, just page number 7 for a second. And back here, this list here, and whichever. So I brought you the chain, the Shalshelet from Asorah, from Ezra, which where we started, all the way through to the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yehudah. Now, see, you'll see that King Herod, Hillel and Shammai and King Herod here appear at the end of the Greek era. And then the Tanaim, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. And we'll see Rabbi Yehoshua, who's going to be coming up a very important figure, was the second generation, together with Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, and we're going to hear a lot about them in a minute. So we've seen that Beit Hillel's Mishnah was beginning to be developed already in the time of Rabbi Yehoshua. By the time of Rabbi Yehoshua, they were not anymore in Yerushalayim. Where were they? Where did they leave? Where did they go? After the Churban, they went to Kerem B'Yavna. Okay? KBY. So, Kerem B'Yavna is the next step on the road towards the Mishnah. And let's have a look now at what's happening in Kerem B'Yavna after the Churban, and how this Mishnah of Hillel and Rabbi Yehoshua really takes off. Please turn back to the front of the sheet and look at source number 5. Yes, back to the beginning, and I won't get you running around anymore now. We'll stick with the order. So comes along Rav Margolis again and says the following. Ulam misibod medinyot, for all sorts of political reasons, lo yachal gam habayit hagadol hazeh lehatmid pu'ulato hakbira. So we didn't have a temple anymore. We couldn't do what we used to do. And therefore there was no one gathering. We saw this last time. The Sanhedrin, which used to be the place that defined the unity of Torah, was no longer functional. It broke down. There still was a thing called the Sanhedrin, and it still had certain tasks. It didn't fully fold until the 4th century, early 5th century, but it no longer acted as a Sanhedrin. They weren't together in one place. So what began to happen? As hitchil kol echad mechachmei hador laharbitz Torah bebeit midrasho haprati. Everybody had their own bet midrash. And from this point you begin to see the names of individuals. Have you ever wondered why when you're learning the Gemara, learn the Mishnah, you don't see any individuals quoted before a certain period? Who are the names that appear on every page of the Mishnah? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yossi, Rabban Gamliel. Why don't we see David HaMelech Amar Kacha? Shlomo HaMelech Amar Kacha? Eliyahu HaNavi Amar Kacha? They weren't part of the process? The answer is because until this period, there was a Sanhedrin. Individual opinions were not relevant. Because whoever had a view or an individual opinion eventually went to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin made a decision, and that was that. And things came out stam. Much of the material which is stam, which is anonymous and unanimous, is from the Sanhedrin HaGadol. But now this was not the case. I'm after the underlined on number 5. Ve'im lefa'amim nit'asu i'eil mechachmei ha'torah v'ayim lechachmei ha'torah v'amdu leminyan v'achriya halotha tzluya. And if from time to time they came together and made a minyan and they made a decision, a quorum, and they actually said this is going to be the halacha, yachol mishalo haya ba'ot minyan loma, someone who wasn't there at the time could turn around and say, al tachoshu leminyan chay, don't listen to them. Who are they? They're not the Sanhedrin HaGadol. They just happen to be a group of rabbis got together to try and establish more of a unanimity in the approach. But he says not, because nobody's all together. There isn't anything that everybody agrees on, and that's why we ended up having, we'll see later, the Talmud. Ulechen huchru ha-talmidim l'tzayen lahem deyot pratiyot. And therefore, from this point, you see this proliferation of different views. Rabbi Ploni Omer Kane, Rabbi Ploni Emer Kat Kane. Different rabbis say this, this, and this. The Gam Keshehir B'Chachamim Hiskimu L'Dat Echad. Okay, Dat Achad. Od Lo Nitzbat LaHadat Hayachid. You couldn't get rid of the minority opinion, and that's why we have minority opinions from this point on, because there is no Sanhedrin, there is no one big body that can actually deal with this. Now, there's a problem with this. Yes.
Did we even have writing before this?
No, there was nothing written down as this in an ongoing basis.
All about the word of mouth.
Correct. Right? Now, people had written notes. We'll see a source or not soon. People kept notes. There was writing, but there wasn't a canon. There wasn't an authorized text of Torah Shabbat.
But they had written notes?
For themselves, but it was never passed on.
I know, but at what point does this alphabet emerge?
Oh no, the alphabet we had. Alphabet we had already thousands of years before this. Writing we had from the time before Avraham Avinu, there was writing in the world. Oh, yeah. Writing is not a new thing. We have Egyptian writing, cuneiform writing. We have written texts from way before this. Look at the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Cuneiform, I knew. What?
The Dead Sea Scrolls date from this period and before this period. We have letters from the Hashmonaim, all sorts of things. So writing's not a problem, but what they wouldn't allow them to do was create a written, authorized version, the definitive version of the Torah Shabbat. And we'll see by the end of today's year, we did get that, eventually. We moved to that, but writing they certainly had.
But the Yehudim ain't analphabetic.
Why? Why? Lama? Al-Tamid. Okay, settled. This period, this idea of everybody doing their own thing is a problem. And they recognize this. Look in number 6. Mishenichnasu, this quote from the Tosefta. Mishenichnasu chachamim bekerem beyavna. When the rabbis came to Kerem beyavna, Amru, they said, look, atida sha'a sheyia adam avakesh davar midivrei Torah ve'eina motzi. There's going to come a time not far from now where people are going to try and learn the Torah, but they won't know where to look. They won't be able to find it. Medivrei Seferim, the Einamot. They looked to the rabbis, but they weren't who to go to because there's so many different views, there are different opinions. Shneimar, okay. Shneimar lachen is a quote from Amos. He says this is what the nevuah from Amos, famous nevuah. Hine yamim ba'im nu ma'ashem elokim. Hishlachti rav v'aretz. There's going to be a hunger. There's going to be a famine. Lo rav lelechem v'lo tzama lamayim ki im lishmoed divrei Hashem. People are going to hunger for the Divrei Hashem because they're not going to know where to find it. For Naum Yam Ad Yam, this is the original Yam Li Yam. Okay, they'll go from sea to sea. Umitzafon vaad Mizrach Yishoitetu Levakeshes Tvar Hashem Allah Yimtzal. Because what's the address? Where do you look? So what they decided to do is they decided to resolve this. How did they resolve this? So, you know, before you turn the page, the Gemara that we had already in number 7, where it said, Amar Rabbi Abba Rabbi Shmuel, number 7, Shalosh Shanim Nechlaku Beishama Beit Hillel, Halalo Oymer Halach Kamoisenu, Halalo Oymer Halach Kamoisenu, Yatsa Batkol, V'Amra, Elu V'Elu Diru El Kimchaim, V'Halacha Kabeit Hillel. We had that already 2 weeks ago. This famous Batkol, what was the Batkol? What was the thing that gave them clarity and allowed them to move forward? And I want to put a little bit of flesh around that to understand what was the bat call. Yeah. If you look at the, was that
in the second page, look over the page, to page 2. If you look at number 8, which is the Yerushalmi's analysis of that bat kol, it gives a couple of pieces of information. At shelo yatsa bat kol, before the bat kol, kol harotzi lahachmi al atzmo, linho kechumri beit shamai, or kechumri beit hila. Let's say somebody wanted to follow all the chumras, wherever they could find them. I go like the chumras of Beit Shammai, I go like the chumras of Beit Hillel. Al ze ne'emar, about such a person, it says, ha'kfil b'choshech holech. Which is, I suppose, in modern day languages, like there's one born every minute. Yeah, the fool walks in the dark. He looks for chumras everywhere he goes, and the Gemara clarifies it's where the chumras are self-contradictory. They're not in line with each other, and actually he's lacking a consistent approach. Kakule elu ve'elu. Somebody's hunting around for lenient opinions wherever they can find them. Because of course now we know we're living in a time where you can go hunting for opinions. There's no longer one Sanhedrin. You can go from place to place and follow whatever you like. Nikra Rosha. Because at the end of the day, you're not interested in the MS. You're just trying to put your own lifestyle and fit the halacha around that. Ella, but rather, what would a person do? Ila kukule didin. Okay, didan. Okay, kukumre didin. In other words, you follow whichever one consistently. You go like the chumras of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. You go like the Beis Hillel's opinion, or you go like Beis Shammai's opinion. Either way. Actually, Abaskol. That was until the Baskol came. Aval mitshiyaz Abaskol, from when the Baskol came out, la'olam halacha kidibre Beis Hillel. From this moment on, we follow Beis Hillel. V'kol ha'oiva al divre Beis Hillel chayiv misa. Very strong. You're not allowed to go against Beis Hillel. Says the Yerushalmi here, Yatza Baskol va'amru elu ve'elu divrei l'kim chaim, aval halacha k'divrei Beis Hillel. Eichan Yatza Baskol. Where did the Baskol come out? When? Pinpoint it to the moment, says the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Bibi amar b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, be'yavna. Be'yavna Yatza Baskol. This is where the Baskol happened, in Yavna, okay? And Rav Margolis adds in number 9, She'ad she'yatsa habatkol bizman Rabban Gamliel de Yavna. This was at the time of Rabban Gamliel. We'll see him coming up right now in Yavna. Oid niskru talmidei Shammai v'Hillel. There were different opinions, but from the Baskol, it began to draw together. What was the moment of the Baskol? And I'm going to show you now another episode, which we call Oto Hayom, or Bo Bayom, that day. This is a mirror image of the terrible day that they went to the attic of Hanani Belchakir, when they were literally killing each other in the Khurban. This is the tikkun for that day. Because there was a day when everybody began to get clarity. And what was that day? It was the day that they deposed Rabban Gamliel, and they started a whole new system. And I'll show you now, you're probably familiar with these, 3 or 4 really page-turners of Gemaras. If you were to serialize this, it would be absolutely fascinating, of political things that led to this, if you like, revolution within Halacha that opened the door for the Mishnah. Look with me in source number 10. We're going to learn a few different Gemaras here from Rosh Hashanah and Brachas. I'm sure they're well known to most of you, but I think they will throw a lot of light on what we're trying to do. Look at number 10. Says the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Demus tsurot levanot hayu lo Rabban Gamliel betavla ubekotel be'aliyato. So Rabban Gamliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, he had pictures of the moon. Why did he have pictures of the moon in his attic? Right, so that when the Eidim came and they said that they were interrogated, and they said, well, what did you see? Did it look like this or did it look like that? He would show them, like, did you see? He wanted to check that they didn't see, I don't know, a cloud in the sky, some sunlight reflecting something. He had to see the exact correct moon. Okay? Shevahemmer et ha-hediotot. He would show that to the basic people who came as atheists. But Omar ha-kazeh ra'it, ra'ita o-kazeh. What did you see? This or this. Now, Masa, there's a story. Shabal Shnayim, 2 Eidim came, Ba'amru, and they said, Reinu Shacharit b'Mizrach v'Arvid b'Ma'arav. We saw the moon right at the end of the last month, in the morning, because remember, at the end of the month, the moon rises just before the sun. A sliver of a moon rises just before the sun on the eastern horizon, on the last day, on the 29th of the month, right at the end of the month. Yeah, 28th. So they saw that happening in the morning, and in the evening they saw, the same evening, the sliver of the moon that sets just after the sun in the west. Which of course is impossible. You cannot see those two things happening on the same day.
They have to be at least a day or two apart. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said, reject them. They can't possibly have seen this. It's not geometrically, cosmologically possible, but it's astronomically possible. When they got to Yavna, Kiblan Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel accepted them for his own reasons, whatever. For Ad Ba'u Shnaim, two more came along. And two more came and said that we saw it in the at its time, but then the next night it wasn't there anymore. And again, which is impossible. But Kiblan Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Gamliel accepted them too. Amar Rabbi Dosa ben Hukana. So Rabbi Dosa said, this is ridiculous. How can you tell us, give a testimony about a woman who gave birth and then tomorrow she's pregnant again? It's ridiculous. It's not possible. Rabbi Yeshua, who is the key player here, says, you know something? I agree with you. Something's going wrong here. How can these Edim be accepted? How can these be valid Edim? They're talking nonsense. Shalach lo Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel sends him a message because he hears that there's a dissension in the ranks. Gozrani alecha shetava etzli b'maklech u'b'mavavavavavav. This is the famous story. You have to come with your wallet. You have to come with your stick, etc. Okay, with your money. B'yom haKippurim shechal liyot b'cheshboncha. According to the way you think the moon should be calculated, your Yom Kippur you have to publicly break to show that it's not really Yom Kippur. Halach umata Rabbi Akiva meitza. Rabbi Akiva, they found, was very, very upset. Amole said to him, Yesh li lilmod shekol ma she'ata Rabbi Gamliel asui. At the end of the day, whatever Rabbi Gamliel decides is the halacha shneimar. Ele mo'adei Hashem yikre kodesh, asher tikra otam, bein bizmanam, bein shelo bizmanam. Once you start unraveling the calendar of the Sanhedrin, there's no end to the matter. So Rabbi Yeshua, at the end of the day, gave in on this occasion. Not on makloi u'masav, he took his stick and he took his wallet, v'yada in his hand, v'halach liyavna, he went to Yavna, etla Rabbi Gamliel, v'yom shechal yom ha-kippurim liyos l'cheshbonot. On the day that he held it should be Yom Kippur. Amud Rabbi Gamliel, v'noshku al-rosho, Rabbi Gamliel stands up and kisses him. Okay, Amalai said to him, Bob Shalom, Rebbe the Talmidi, Rebbe the Chochma the Talmidi Shekibalta Devarai. Fine. It seems that they've made up, they've kissed and made up, literally, at the end. But Rabbi Yeshua has been publicly humiliated at the end of the day. And that's not the end of the story. Number 11. Tan Rabban. Maase b'talmid echa shebalit nei Rabbi Yeshua. A Talmud asked Rabbi Yeshua, Amalai said to him, Tilat Arvit Rushut? Is it an obligation to daven Maariv, or is it a rishut? Meaning, if there are other mitzvot that take priority over it, maybe you can set Maariv aside. Because at the end of the day, Shacharit and Mincha are instituted keneged as a correlation to the korbanot of the tamid in the morning and the tamid in the afternoon. And there was no tamid in the evening. Sometimes there was stuff to burn off from the day's korbanot, and sometimes there wasn't. So maybe Maariv is a rishut. Amalei said to him, rishut. Rishut doesn't mean you can do what you like. Rishut means there are circumstances in which Maariv does not apply. Balit nei Rabban Gamliel. So this Talmud went to Rabban Gamliel, Amalai, and said to him, Tfilat Arvid Rishut Chova. Amalai said to him, Chova. Okay, machloket. Amalai said, then he said to him, Vahalo Rabbi Yeshua Amali Rishut. Rabbi Yeshua told me he was a Rishut, which is maybe not the most helpful thing to say. Amalai, he said to him, Hamtein ad sheyichnesu ba'alei treisin the Beit HaMidrash. Let's bring in the ba'alei treisin to the Beit HaMidrash. Who are the ba'alei treisin? The armor bearers. What's a treis? It's a shield. They called in the police into the Beit HaMidrash, and they said, we're going to have to take this in hand. Kushenichnesu ba'alei treisin, and you can hear maybe echoes here of what happened earlier with Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. There are now weapons in the Beit Midrash. So when they all got together, Amad Hashoyel Vashal, Tzvilat Arav Rishut Chova, they asked the question in public. Amaloi Rabban Gamliel, so Rabban Gamliel said to him, Chova. Amalahem Rabban Gamliel, Chachamim Rabban Gamliel turned around to the people in the room, including Rabbi Yeshua. Klum Yesh Adam Shecholik with Abazet. Does anyone here disagree with this psak? Amalei Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "Laf." No, I don't disagree. Ah, Amalei, he said to him, "V'hala mishmecha amruli rishut." I heard specifically that you said the opposite. You said rishut. Amalei, he said to him, Yeshua, amod al raglecha v'yidubach. Get up and give testimony. Rabbi Gamliel Yoshev Doresh, and that whole day Rabbi Gamliel was sitting and teaching. Rabbi Yeshua Omed al Raglav, and Yeshua was standing in the corner like a naughty schoolboy. Adshe Ranenu Kala'am, until the people began to complain. This is not acceptable. Va'amru lechuspit amaturgman amoid. People are beginning to get unhappy. And the whole thing came to a climax in number 12. Amri, the people said, Ad kama neitzrei benezel. How long is he going to publicly humiliate Rabbi Yeshua? But Rosh Hashanah ishtakit tarev. Last Rosh Hashanah, with the whole calculation of the month, he upset him then. But b'chor b'maseh the Rabbi Tzadik tarev. Another occasion which I'm not getting into now, he upset him then. B'hacha nami tarev. Now he's good upsetting him again. Tavan avrei. Let's depose Rabban Gamliel. Let's take Rabban Gamliel away. Man noikim lei. So who are we going to put in his place? Noik b'le Rabbi Yeshua. Are we going to put Rabbi Yeshua in his place? Well, that's really inappropriate. Baal Maaseh, he's part of the whole issue here. We can't do that to Rabbi Gamliel. Noga le Rabbi Akiva, we'd like to put Rabbi Akiva in place. Dilma Anishnei, the late Schut Avos. But he doesn't have Schut Avos because Rabbi Akiva was Ben Gerim. He was from a family of converts. Ela Noik mila Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. They found a compromise candidate, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He's not only a very wise person, he's rich, and he's descended from Ezra HaKohen, meaning what? Good yichus, good chochma, perfect. The only problem is, he's a young guy in the Bet Midrash, just married. They came and said to him, we'd like to appoint you as the Rosh Hashiva. So what did he run and do? Amalu, he said to them, I'm going to ask my wife. When I asked my wife, Azul ve'emlech b'dibisu, he went straight there, hoped to ask his wife. So what did she tell him? Amrale, she told him, Dilma Marvin lach, if they could get rid of Rabban Gamliel, they'll get rid of you. How long do you think you're going to last? Rabban Gamliel couldn't keep it going. You'll be gone, you'll be here today, gone tomorrow. Amrale said to her, listen, Lishdamesh inish yumachada v'kasta demoikra. Let a person use a precious cup for one day, ulamacha litva, and then tomorrow it can be broken. Meaning, if I can be Rosh Hashiva for a day, then that's good enough. Amrullah, so she said to him, look, okay, but leitlach chiyuta, you've no white hairs, you're a young guy, you've only just got a black beard. It's a famous story. Hahu Yuma, okay, that day, but Manisrei Shani, he was 18 years old. It's Rachiv Le Nisa, and there was a miracle happened, whatever, probably from the stress involved. Bahadri Le Tamisrei said Daridichus, and he grew a white beard. His beard turned white. Hainu Dika Amu Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That's why we read on the Seder night the famous thing when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hari Ane Keben Shivim Shana. I am like a 70-year-old Veloy Ben Shivim Shana. He wasn't 70, but he was like a 70. I think maybe the stress and the politics overnight aged him to that degree. Now, Now, why am I bringing you these stories? The problem is that they're interesting in and of themselves. Because what we're witnessing here is not just a political disagreement, but it's a major revolution. Have a look in Gemara in Brachos in number 13. Tzna oisa hayom, that day that they got rid of Rabbi Gamliel, saklu l'shoyme hapetach, they removed the shoyme from the doors. They took the shoymrim away. But nitalahem reshus l'talmidim likanes, and they opened up the doors of the Beit Midrash to everybody who could come. A democratization of learning. Shehaya Rabbi Gamliel machriz va'omer. Rabbi Gamliel used to insist and announce kol tamid she'ein toicho kabaro lo yikanes lebet midrash. That in order to get in my Beit Midrash, you have to be toicho kabaro. Your outside and your inside have to match. It's a very high standard. It's very elitist. And Rabbi Gamliel, by the way, even though he was descended from Beit Hillel, we see many Gemaras where it says he tended towards Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, which was a much more elitist, much more restrictive halacha, so he kept this rule going. Hahut Yuma, so on that day when they opened it up, Atosfu Kamasaf Sali. They added more and more benches to the Beit Midrash. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Pligiba, Abbas Yosef, Ben Dustai, Rabbono. There's a disagreement. Chadama once said, Itosiv Arba Meir Sassali. 400 benches they added. And one said 700 benches they added, etc., etc. Meaning, this was a day of immense proportions. This was a day where the Torah really was opened up. And in that sense, that I want to bring to you as a tikkun for what was going on earlier. Let's turn over to page 3 and look at what Rav Zalman Margolis says. Hitgale hariv ad shenitnamna berebi Lezer ben Azari yilereish masifta. Until that day that Rabbi Lezer ben Azari was appointed as the Rosh Hashiva, shehinhig mechadash tochnit ben Hillel. He reinvigorated the whole tochnit, the whole program of Ben Hillel, who was the more open of the positions. Bo bayom hitkatzvu mechadash kol chachmei Yisrael b'mamadecha. It was like a new beginning. V'haya oisa hayom kehemshech yom hakibbutz haklali bebeit Hanani b'chizkiyah lefnim. It was like a continuation of that earlier negative convocation. Ach, but ki hapam, this time Rabbi Beis Hillel had the upper hand. V'lo haisa halacha shehaisa tzluyu v'lo purusha. There was nothing left outstanding. Everything was resolved. The Az Bekal Kol Chachma Yisrael Yatza Bas Kol. And that's what it means that a Bas Kol came out. It wasn't that voices came out of the wall. It was a day of clarity that the people suddenly had, that the Bas Kol came out, Shehalacha Kebeis Hillel Bekol Makom. And therefore what you have now is, you have the end really of the Beis Shammai school. Rabbi Gamliel is deposed, although he's still somewhat involved. Rabbi Eliezer, who we saw the big disagreement between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about, remember, about the oven and the walls of the Beit Midrash falling in, etc. Rabbi Eliezer was pushed out completely. He was put into Cheirer. And therefore, from this day on, you have the beginning of the success, if you like, of the Beit Shammai program, of the Beit Hillel program, which we'll see leads now into Rabbi Akiva in a few minutes and leads to what we have today as the Mishnah. Okay, let's move on, away from the politics and the history, into the idea of codifying Torah Shebaal Peh. Number 17. Why 17? 17. Yes, on page 3. Why did they not have a Mishnah up until now? Why had it never been done before? So look at number 17. Ksiv. There's a Gemara in Gittim. Ktayv lecha et advarim ha'elim. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write certain things down. Ksiv, and then yet it says after that, ki al pi dvarim ha'elim, that other things have to be baal peh. Haketzad. How does that work? So the Gemara says, dvarim shebichtav iyat ha'reshai la'omram al peh. Because dvarim shebichtav, written Torah, you're not allowed to say orally. If a bar mitzvah boy knows his entire parasha by heart, which they often do, and he just stares at the sky and recites it, you're not yet. You have to say Dvarim Shebichtav from a ktav, not from baal peh. However, Dvarim Shebaal Peh, but things which are oral, now it doesn't say you're not allowed to write them. Look at what it says. I'ata Roshai La'omram Bichtav. You can't say them from a text. You can't say them from a text. What does it mean you can't say them from a text? You can't produce an authorized version. Like we have of the Torah. We have a canon. We have an authorized text which we use. You can't do that for Torah Shabbat. Can you write it? Of course you can. People always wrote things down to remember them. Look in Rashi number 18. They had these things called Megillot Sterim. Secret, hidden scrolls. Shehistirua. They would hide them away. Because they shouldn't have written them. Why did they write them? All these naughty rabbis writing things down when they weren't meant to write them. Let them not write them. If it's also, it's also. Then my grandfather, Alev Alav Shalom, used to have this every Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He was in charge of security for the shuls in before they had in England the CST and all that. So he organized like to make sure there was nothing going on. So he liaised with the police very closely. Going back 30, 40 years. So every Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so the shul was packed, Baruch Hashem. But of course the car park was closed. And everybody parked in all of the streets, all around the shul. The whole place was completely gridlocked because all the people who were in shul were parked, blocking everybody's drives all around for miles and miles and miles. So the police would run to my grandfather, pulling their hair. They'd say, I don't understand. You have a car park that has like 800 car parking spaces in it, and it's locked on the busiest day of the year. So my grandfather said to them, yeah, but they're not meant to drive to shul. So the police would come to the said, well, if they're not meant to drive, why are they driving? Like, why? Every year we had the same problem.
couldn't understand it. So they're not meant to write. Why do they write? No, he says, Kishishonim Divrei Yachid Chadashim She'ena Nishnah Bebet Midrash. They heard a Divrei Yachid, a new idea. Of course they write it down so it doesn't get forgotten. Everybody wrote things down. They had ledgers and they wrote things down. But Masterian to Megillah. But they then hide away the Megillah. Why? Because they don't want that to be the authorized text. The next generation has to write its own text. We talked about that. Has to have its own Torah Shabbat Peh. And the Rambam underlines that as well in number 19. The Amos Moshe Rabbeinu Vad Rabbeinu HaKadosh. From the days of Moshe to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who is Rabbi Yudah Anasi. We'll see soon. Loi Chibru Chibur. They didn't make a text. A Machberet. They had no Chibur. Shemalam din Otobu Rabbin. That they would use in public for Torah Shabbat Peh. Ela B'chol Dor V'Dor. Rosh Beis Din. Or Navi. Shehaya Ba'Oysa Hador. Kosev La'atzmai. They'd write for themselves. Zikaron HaShmuos. For whom Malamid al Peh Barabim. And they teach orally, but they'd have their own written notes. Everyone would write their own notes down according to their ability. All the new things, they would write them down, etc., but they would never produce this text. And at the end he says, Tamid ad Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Up until Rabbeinu HaKadosh, they have no text, but then they did. How did that happen? So we saw Hillel already began the process of putting it together. Rabbi Yeshua continued that. Oysa Hayom, Boba Yom, that day, the famous day when they opened up the Bet Midrash, that process was taken forward. The key figure is Rabbi Akiva. Now you have to understand Rabbi Akiva was the student of both Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. He represents a synthesis figure. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel together in one person. He is the new beginning in many ways, and he put his mark on the Mishnah. Number 20. Rabbi Akiva says the Gemara in Yitzin is Otzer Belom. He's an organized storehouse. Imagine a good machzan with lots of shelves, not like my machzan always looks like with 1,000 boxes all thrown on top of each other, but something very organized where you can get to exactly what you need. Says Rashi, why is Rabbi Akiva compared to an organized storehouse? So number 20 says Rashi, Otebul. Kach mufurish ba'avos to Rabbi Nosson. This is how it's described in Avot of Pirkei Avot of Rabbi Nosson, which is the parallel Pirkei Avot there. Lemahaya Rabbi Akiva Domeh. What was Rabbi Akiva like? La'ani, to a poor person, shenata kupasa, he takes his basket, v'yatza l'sada, he goes out to the field. So what does a poor person do? Matza sa'irin, he finds a little bit of barley, katza, he cuts it off, b'nasanba, he throws it in the basket. Matza chitin, nasanba, b'chein pulin, b'chein adashin. He throws everything into the basket altogether. Kushiba, lebeisa, when he gets back home, biro kol min umin la'atzmo. He then does his separating when he gets back home. Kach Rabbi Akiva. So to Rabbi Akiva, kushalamid me rabbeisa, when he learnt originally from his rabbis. Shamad var mikra mirabaisav, he learned a bit of chumash. Va'achrav halach, and then he learned halach. Va'achrav midrash, va'achrav agada. He learned it all in a mixed up way. Nasan libu, lachto aleim ulagarsan. And he just memorized them, and he knew them all. And shehayu sidurim bepiv. The loy amar, he didn't turn around and say, elmud mikra la'asmai, I'm going to have categorize this on its own. Midrash la'asmai, etc. Aval. When Rabbi Akiva became the great Rabbi Akiva, Asta kol haTorah matbeot matbeot. He turned the Torah into matbeot. What's a matbeot?
Coin.
As in the English word to coin a phrase. What does it mean to coin a phrase? You fix it. That's it. Mary had a little lamb. She didn't have a little heart problem, or didn't have a little issue with, or whatever it is, okay? Mary had a little lamb. Everybody knows that. It's a matbea. Maybe you never saw it written down in your lives, but you know it. It's an oral text. It's actually a Christian oral text, but that's not for now. But that's a side issue. It's an oral text. So too Rabbi Akiva Lahavdil from Mary Had a Little Lamb, Rabbi Akiva turned the Torah into texts, oral texts, matbeot, sider midrash, sifra, sifrei, levadam. He taught them all alone in their own right. He created these categories of different texts. V'sha'ana la'atzman, the Talmidav, okay, the halachas la'atzman, the agaras la'atzman. We began to have now a system of books that became the books that we later had as full texts, the midrash,
the Sifra, the Sifrei, the Mishnah, etc., in all these different areas. Rabbi Akiva, therefore, was in many ways the great hope, which is, by the way, why we get still to this day, we have a mini Avelut during the Sefer HaOmer for the death of Rabbi Akiva's students. You might ask yourself, well, after all this time, Nebuch, after all the things that have happened to the Jewish people, why would we still connect in some way to the death of a few thousand students way back? Many more students than that were killed during the Churban, during the Bar Kokhba revolts, many more. So what's the problem with Rabbi Akiva's students? The answer is, because this was the new beginning. And that new beginning was quashed by the whole, during the Bar Kokhba revolts. Yeah, by Rav Chaviva. And his students really were the great hope, and at the end of the day, that didn't materialize. But, before you turn the page, if you look here, number 21, Amr Shneim Asa Elef Zugim, Talmidim, Hayulot Rabbi Akiva, okay, he had these 24,000 students, 12,000 Chavrusas, the Kula Mesa Beperik Echad Mipishaloi Nagu Kavad Zelazen, now I'm not getting into that more now, that's Sresa Omer Torah, okay, Achibari Mikiva Etzer Avoysev Sheva Drayim, but then he started up again, Vashanon Lehem, and who did he make as a new group of students? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. And they became the new pillars of the Torah that became eventually the Mishnah. Let's talk about the Mishnah for a few minutes. The Mishnah, therefore, was put together over time, from the time of Hillel, through Rabbi Yeshua and Kerem B'Yavna, through Rabbi Akiva, who organized it, until eventually you ended up with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And the Gemara says here, Rabbi, the Rabbi Nosson Soif Mishnah. Eventually, Rebbe, as in Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who we just called Rebbe, and Rabbi Nosson, his colleague, were the end of the Mishnah. What does he mean, the end of the Mishnah? Says Rashi, 22, on the top of page 4. No problem. Says like this, says Rashi, Sof Mishnah, Sof HaTanaim, this was the end of the Tanaim. Ad Yemehem, until that time, Amru Ish Edvarav Bebet HaMidrash, each person would give his own views in the Bet Midrash. The Hayu Talmidim Gers in Shmua Shmua Levada. Just like we saw, everyone had their individual approaches. The Loi Hayu Mesechtot Sidurim. There were no Mesechtot. There were no volumes. The word Mesechta, which I'm sure you're familiar with, people are learning this Mesechta, that Mesechta, it wasn't organized in volumes. The Sidur, the Kavat Tala Seder, he organized it and he made it all into a Seder. They gathered together everything that had been said before. The Sadru et HaMasechtas, they organized the Masechtas. Okay? The Achreihem lo yosifu el mahat. And I think this is the most fascinating part of this statement. That says Rashi, after the Mishnah, lo yosifu el mahat. There was very little added. Now, added. There was very little extra. Now, let me ask you a question. How big is the Mishnah? How much? You could fit it into a book. Like this, take away all the commentary, but how big is the Talmud? Why is he saying there was very little added after the Mishnah? The entire Talmud was added after the Mishnah. The answer is no, it wasn't. The entire Talmud was extra material, but at the end of the day, there were very few extra principles. The condensing of Jewish law into the if you like, a concentrated matbeot of what is from Aleph to Taf, what is Halakha, what is the halachic system, that was done in the Mishnah. All the Gemara really does is explain, expand, and understand. It doesn't add to that process, and therefore the critical process in creating the Talmud was the formation of the Mishnah. What is the Mishnah? The Mishnah is, if you take the entirety of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and you focus it and concentrate it and condense it into the most, if you like, the smallest unit you can have without losing things and without making it completely ununderstandable, that's what they got. And they left the rest oral. Meaning, the Mishnah is not written as a book that you can just read and understand Judaism. You still need a Rebbe, you still need an explanation, you still need a commentary, and that commentary was meant to remain oral. But at the end of the day, the Mishnah was produced. Whether it was written or not written at the time is a machloket, which I'm not getting into now. I brought it on the sheet in 25, 26, between the Rambam, 24, 25 rather, between the Rambam and Rav Shurugon. The Rambam says it was written. Rav Shurugon says at the end of the day it was an oral text, like the Matbeot, but that doesn't matter for now. Eventually it was written. But what we had is we had this window of opportunity, this peace between Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and the Roman governor at the time, Antoninus, who we think may be Marcus Aurelius, but at the end of the day, they got together and they said, look, we have a small window of opportunity. After the Bar Kokhba revolts, after everything died down and people began to come back, and the Hadrianic persecution began to be lifted, they said, if we don't do it now, if we don't do this massive work now, who knows whether we'll ever get another window. And at the end of the day, they were correct. Because not long, and I brought you on page 4 at the bottom, some historical background, not long after they put the Mishnah together, the Roman Empire became Christian with Constantine, and from that moment on it was almost impossible to maintain an active Jewish community in Eretz Israel, and everybody really decamped over to Babel. So this really was the last opportunity, the last window, and they took it, and they created it, and they produced this new text, whether it was oral or written, that's a separate issue, which is what we now call the Mishnah. And I brought you, if you look, if you like diagrams, some people like diagrams more than texts, I brought you on page 5 and page 6 a few things which I just want to show you before we finish. Page 5, where you'll see there's a tree diagram like this, okay? Over the next page, here, just this one here. Okay. If you look, I brought you here a structural diagram of all the Masechtas in the Mishnah, which I'm also not going to go through now. I brought you at the bottom a piece from Rabbi Wein's book that I copied with his permission, which goes through each of... Rabbi Wein has a very nice sefer specifically on the formation of the Mishnah, another one on the Gemara. It's well worth getting. And this just summarizes what all the Masechtas are. But I think they're quite well known. If you just look for a second at if you turn the page this way round, you'll see the structural tree diagram. You'll see that he divided the Mishnah into 6. This was his own, or Hillel's original structural system. Zraim, which deals with agricultural issues, all of the Tremot and the Matzrot, and challah, and shmitah, etc., and they threw in brachas into that as well because of the food. Moed, which deals with all the holidays, which are all there apart from one. There's one big question on the Moedim. If you look, you'll see them all there, Shabbat, and Pesach, and Yom Kippur, and Sukkah, and Rosh Hashanah, and Ta'anios, and Megillah. What's missing from the Masechtas of Moed? Chanukah? Nobody knows why Chanukah is not there. Chanukah, there's no Masechet Chanukah. The halachot of Chanukah are there in the Mishnah, but they're scattered around other places. And one theory brought down by the Poskim is that the Mishnah was at the end of the day put together under the supervision of the Romans, and the idea of having the Chanukah story taking a major part was worrying to the Romans. The Maccabeans, etc., the Jews were still a political problem. That may be the truth, it may not be, that's one of the theories, but that's Moed. Nashim deals with women and men and all the financial arrangements with marriage, Ketubot, and Yibum, and Sotah, Gitin, and divorce, and Kiddushin, and marriage, also in the Darim, vows of different kinds between husbands and wife and others, and then they get into Nazir as well. Nezikin is all the damages, all the court proceedings. Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basha just mean in Aramaic part 1, part 2, and part 3, basically, which is one big masechta of dealing with legal process, and contracts, and torts, and property law, etc. Sanhedrin, Makot, Shavuot, etc. Kodshim deals with the korbanot, all the different korbanot, Zvachim, which are the meaty korbanot, the Menachot, which are the vegetarian korbanot. Plenty of vegetarian korbanot as well, okay. Chulin, which deals with the regular meat that we eat, which is not korbanot, and many others. And Taharot deals with Tumah and Tahara. All the halachot of Tumah and Tahara, the different kinds of purity and impurity of Tumas Meis and all the other Tumas that we have, are all there in Taharot. And at the end of the day, you have a system here of Sedarim, divided into Masechtot, which are themselves divided into chapters, prakim, which are divided into mishnayot. Each chapter of Mishnah had around 10, 12, ranging anywhere between 5 and 15, something like that, mishnayot. And there were various systems to learn them. If you just look in the last couple of minutes, over onto page 6, from the last, not the last page, but the penultimate page, I brought you a few interesting diagrams. There are 4,192 Mishnayot. There are 4,192 Mishnayot. And therefore, if you learn one a day, it would take you a good long time. However, there are various other systems to learn them. And of course, the more you learn them, the more the easier it is. Like marathon running. If I told you to run a marathon tomorrow morning, it would be probably a daunting task. But if you train for it,
it's too hot.
With an air-conditioned marathon. There, and I brought you on the side here different programs of learning Mishnayot. If you learn one a day, two a day, six a day, 12 a day, a chapter a day, etc. One of the real marathon running Mishnayot learners, there's a system of 18 prakim a day. Now, 18 prakim a day is this circular chart that I brought you in the middle here, which is they divided the entire Mishnah into 18 prakim a day for 30 days, 29 days, and you finish the entire Mishnah every month. And there are people, and there are many people who do this. Mm-hmm. If you really get up to speed, and you've done them many times, think about it, every month you go over the whole Mishnah again, you can probably learn your 18 prakim, which is around 170, 180 Mishnahs, probably you can learn it in about an hour. Because as you're going through it, it's constantly registering, etc. If we were to sit and learn 18 prakim of Mishnah, it would take us more than an hour. Okay, it would take us days and days. That is the average number of Mishnayot in each perek. Why is that of importance and interest? So you can see, like, on average, whether you're in for a big... So at the end of the day, some of the Masechtas slightly less Mishnayos in the perek. But believe me, when you're learning 18 prakim a day, this begins to be important to you. Exactly whether it's 8 or 9 or 10, etc. Therefore, this is something maybe to aim for. But the Mishnah at the end of the day is... I recently made a siyum on Mishnayos. It took me more than a month to learn them, I'll tell you that. But it's a few times that I've done this, it's an amazing limud of the breadth of Jewish knowledge and understanding of Torah Shabbat Peh, all the way from this to that, not just the stuff which is practical, but everything, the Korbanos and Tumah V'Tahara, and all those things that we don't yet have on a daily basis. And therefore, this became the Mishnah. And then we have it today, now. Of course, it develops, and next time, what I want to talk about, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, is the Gemara. Because the Gemara, how the Gemara was written, why the Gemara was written, how it was sealed, meaning, why have we never had another Talmud since that one? Why didn't Rashi turn around in the 11th century and say, you know what, it's been 500 or 600 years since we had a Talmud, time for a refresher, let's make a new one. Why not? Why did the Shulchan Aruch never do that in the 16th century? Why did we seal the Talmud once we got the Gemara and then say that is halacha? And after that we can't do anything until the Sanhedrin comes again? That's the question we need to address that next week. Because that, at the end of the day, what distinguishes what's today called Orthodox Judaism from Conservative Judaism and certainly from Reform Judaism, we need to understand that well, and that will be the Ezra Hashem, the topic of Shir 9. And then Shir 10, which is our last Shir, we'll understand the modern halachic process and how things work since the Gemara in that way. Okay, thank you again for coming. I wish you a wonderful day. I hope we all have a cool week.